Well, we're joined now by Dave Helling, my colleague at The Star. Kansas City, Missouri Mayor Sly James has appointed a panel to look at the city charter, a charter that was originally passed in 1909, and Dave writes about that in this morning's newspaper. He'll write about it again on Friday in his column then. And Dave, always good to have you. Thanks for taking some time, buddy.
Yeah, great to be with you, Steve.
Why are we looking at changing the city charter now? What's even the point of that, Dave?
Well, the charter itself requires that every 10 years the city take a look at its sort of organizational document, and it's been about 7 years or so since that's happened. So this committee does what other committees have done in the past, and that is to take a look at all the provisions of the charter and try and determine if they're best suited to the political and governmental environment that we live in. And I think the reason I wrote about it in today's paper, and Len Horsley and others have been writing about it, is that you do hear some whispers from people close to the process that they do want to take a pretty serious look at the way the citizens of Kansas City are represented at the council, and that the way they've been represented has basically not changed for 80, 90 years, and so there's some sense that maybe there's a better way to do it, and they'll be talking about that starting this week.
Well, there are a couple of big questions on the table, it seems to me, and you're right, any number of us have written about this. One is, should the mayor have more power? You know, Kansas City has avoided and danced around this issue for so many years in the wake of Tom Pendergast. Is it time for Kansas City to have a strong mayor form of government? The other question on the table is the one you wrote about today, which is some concerns in minority communities, Hispanics, African Americans, that they are being underrepresented through this system of what we have in district council members, at large council members. Tell us about that and some of the history, Dave, that goes back, way back in Kansas City's history.
Well, it used to be in Kansas City that you actually, Steve, had two houses in the city council.
I didn't know that until I read your column today.
Yeah. As strange as it sounds, in the late 1800s, early 1900s, you actually had an upper house, which consisted of 9, 10, 14, and the number varied. But basically, the upper house was elected at large. 14 members, voted by everybody in the city. And then a lower house, which was which consisted of representatives elected by ward, what were then called wards, what we would now call districts. And those groups, just like the House and the Senate, got together, and then the mayor could veto bills. It was very much like the federal system. You had a two-house legislature and then an executive. In 1925, that changed. They sort of smushed everything together so that you would have a single house. Half of it would be elected by district, the other half at large. And then the mayor elected at large got the vote. And I think that was the significant change because, in essence, it allowed all of the city's voters to have nominal control of the council rather than a district-by-district setup, even though there was still some representation.
Yeah, but there's some irony here, as you point out in the column, which is that just in the wake of this change of governance, that ushered in the Tom Pendergast era.
Right. Pendergast at the time sort of said, well, it'll be easier for me to control nine people than it would be at the time 32 plus the mayor. So, yes, I mean, I think that the sort of fundamental question that this group will have to answer, Steve, is do we want a legislative system in which council members are more directly responsible to people in narrow geographic districts, or do we still want some setup that protects the interests of the city at large at the expense of direct district representation? And as I say, we've had the latter now for almost 100 years. You do get the sense that there is a push from some people, particularly minority communities, that the wiser approach would be to give council members a more direct link to their neighborhoods and their districts, eliminate the at-large positions or limit them, instead of having six, you might have three, for example. And then as a byproduct of that, you would give the mayor more power because he would represent the entire city, and you could do some other administrative things if you took him away from his links now to the council. That's the talk you hear anyway.
Well, you have framed these questions very well, and in the wake of that, let's get our listeners to chime in here. Is it time to change the way this Kansas City governs itself through the district setup and the representation of the council, the way that's governed, and is it time to give the mayor more power? Our phone number here, 416-235-2888, and our email address, UpToDate at KCUR.org, or you can tweet us at KCUR UpToDate. How likely are changes to occur here, Dave? Do you anticipate some changes, or how tough of a task is this going to turn out to
be? Well, I think there will be some changes, in part, Steve, because there is concern that the city's continuing reliance on at-large positions could put it at risk for a lawsuit under the Voting Rights Act, primarily because of some concern that minority rights are not being protected in the city's charter. We should be a little bit clear on this. The current African-American representation on the council, it almost perfectly mirrors the city's African-American population, if you count the mayor, which you should since he's on the council, as part of the minority representation. It's about 30% minority in Kansas City, African-American, 30%, and about 30% of the members of the council are African-American. The big problem is Latino representation mm-hmm. on the council. There is none. And there is a sizable Hispanic Latino community in the city of Kansas City. They have no representation at all, so there's some concern about that. And so I do think there will be some pressure to at least propose some charter changes that might increase the likelihood of that kind of representation. Whether that will get past the voters, remember any major change would have to go to voters, mm-hmm. is another question altogether. And if you couple that with a strong mayor, it could make for a fascinating election season in Kansas City as the people in the community debate some of these changes.
Is it time to give Mayor Sly James more authority? Would we even be having this conversation if Mark Funkhauser was still mayor? 816-235-2888 is our phone number. UpToDate at KCUR.org is our email address. Joe from South Kansas City. Joe, good morning.
Yeah, I've got a question. Is there any evidence or any studies that would lead us in one way, one direction or the other? Or is it all just people's opinion and their own self-interest? You know, I want my guy to represent me. But surely there are other models and some results of how well this works. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Yeah, Joe, thank you. David?
Yeah, it's fascinating to me because I think Joe is right that there are dozens of different models for the way cities are governed. You know, it's very interesting. Yeah. States are very much modeled on the federal system, almost, you know, to very specific detail. Cities, on the other hand, have all kinds of different ways of making their decisions. What you hear about in Kansas City, Steve, is if this happens, the city will move to more of a St. Louis model, and that would be a good place for us to look at the way they run government in St. Louis City. There, they have a board of aldermen, 28 aldermen and women, who represent just districts. No one is elected at large on that board. And then you have a president of the board of aldermen who is elected from the entire city. And they sort of do the legislative work for the city of St. Louis. And then the mayor is quite apart from that. The mayor can introduce legislation. He can take part in the debate, but he has no vote. He's much more of an executive/administrator for the city of St. Louis, more direct responsibility over the way the laws are carried out. That, in essence, makes him more powerful in that sense. He's like kind of a city manager over there, as opposed to Kansas City, which has a mayor and a manager. And then the legislative function is taken, again, by people who represent specific districts. So my guess is if this goes forward, there will be a lot of work done to try and understand how well St. Louis is governed under this model and whether it's applicable to the people of Kansas City or not.
We're visiting with the Stars, Dave Hellingham. We want to know if you think the mayor of Kansas City should have more clout or not, more power or not. 816-235-2888 is our phone number. UpToDate at KCUR.org. Dave, do you think the average voter out there, are people paying attention to charter changes? Because this gets down in the weeds pretty quickly here.
Well, yeah, I mean, if this commission, and it's possible that they'll do this, if the committee that was appointed to study this comes back with some nipping and tucking, you're right, most people won't pay much attention to it. There was a charter change that came up a couple of years ago that changed the way the initiative and petition process, referendum petition process, worked in Kansas City, and voters actually rejected that. That Kansas City voters are pretty protective of their right to initiate laws on their own behalf and then force referenda on ordinances that they don't like. And any group that tries to sort of monkey with that, Steve, probably runs into some pretty stiff headwinds fairly quickly. And there would be a lot of attention paid if, indeed, we try to move away from an at-large system that we currently have to an in-district system. But by and large, if it's not that, if it's just the way, you know, budgets are proposed or even technical ways, changes in the ways that the mayor interfaces with the public and the council, I don't think there'll be a lot of focus on it by the public, frankly.
Again, the Star's Dave Helling is our guest. You know, David, we're sitting here talking about the ghost of Tom Pendergast, and you really can't help but wonder if the ghost of Mark Funkhauser isn't lingering over all this, too. I mean, would we even be having this conversation under, you know, what turned out to be a very unpopular mayor in Mark Funkhauser? Sly James, obviously, by all outward appearances, seems to be very popular with citizens out there. Would we even be having this conversation under Funkhauser?
Well, I did get a phone call, a message this morning after my column ran from a reader who said, in essence, I like everything you wrote except giving the mayor more power. I just remember what life was like under Funkhauser.
There you go.
And some of this, you're exactly right, some of this relates not just to the way the government is structured in Kansas City, but the actual people who occupy those offices. I always get a chuckle when they start talking about a strong mayor in Kansas City, because to some degree, the mayor is always as strong or not strong as that mayor wants to be. I mean, you know, politics is an art as well as a science, and so you can do, and I'm going to write about this Friday a little bit, you could devise any system you want, but it takes people to execute them, and so I don't think I've, and I'm sure you haven't ever, in fact, I think you wrote about this, every mayor we've ever covered wants more power.
Yes.
The question is whether this is the best system, not necessarily for the mayor or the council, but for the people of Kansas City, and whether there are ways to get the government to be more attentive to their needs. And I do think this commission will take a good hard look at that.
You know, Dave, I want to move on to a couple of other comments quickly, but who is on the charter panel? Who's going to make recommendations to the full city council going forward here?
Well, there are 13 members. 100 years ago, they called them freeholders. I'm not sure what that means, but some names you'll recognize. Duke Djakovic is on the committee. He's with the AFL-CIO. Tim Crystal, who's been around City Hall for a jillion years, a lawyer for North of the River. He's going to take part in it. Steve Glorioso, I don't have to introduce that name to your listeners, of course. Bobby Hernandez, who used to be on the council, is also on the committee. Gail Holliday, Modest Miles, Stacey Daniels Young. So there are some names that people would recognize, smart people, people who have been around politics in Kansas City for many, many, many years. I think they'll do good work. I do think they have a threshold question. Do we want to throw the whole thing out and start over, or do we want to nip and tuck around the edges? And we may get a sense of that in the next couple of weeks of what approach they're going to take.
But you actually could see, at least potentially, a strong mayor recommendation coming out of these folks, right? It's on the table.
But I don't think that you'll get just a strong mayor. If you get strong mayor, you will also get changes in districts. I don't think they'll do either or. They may do both. They may say, here's a way to make the mayor stronger, here's a way to redo district representation. If they decide not to do that, then I do think you'll just get sort of nipping and tucking, and people won't pay that much attention.
Let's move on to a couple of other topics today. Breaking news this morning, Senator Claire McCaskill is out with an endorsement this morning. David, who did she endorse?
She endorsed a group called Ready for Hillary, so I don't think we have to tell your listeners what the last name is either.
Yeah, probably not.
I mean, it's obviously Hillary Clinton. You know, of course, we don't even know for sure that Hillary Clinton is going to be a candidate for president in 2016. This group is apparently trying to convince her to do that, and perhaps Senator McCaskill's jumping on board will be helpful in that regard. One of the first Democrats to really affirmatively pick a winner or pick a candidate in 2016, but everything we read suggests Hillary Clinton has not made up her mind at all about this. It does suggest that people are picking sides fairly quickly. Money will be raised starting next year, and Senator McCaskill, who famously, of course, endorsed Barack Obama in 2008 is you know, trying to pick somebody fairly early in the process.
I was going to say, she is the first member of Congress to and get involved with this group, Ready for Hillary, to try to convince her to go. And you can't help but sort of wonder, David, this is, as you pointed out, Claire backed Barack Obama in 2008. That created, you know, there was a divide in the U.S. Senate between Democrats who backed Hillary, Democrats who backed Barack, and she clearly is trying to get right with the Clinton crowd by coming
right
out this early for Hillary Clinton.
And she has not been right with the Clinton crowd, both because of 2008 and because of statements made about Bill Clinton earlier. But you do get the sense, Steve, perhaps you agree or disagree, but you and I have talked about this. I think the Democratic Party is aching to nominate a woman in 2016.
Yeah,
I think they feel they nominated an African-American in 2008, and that broke a barrier, and now they'd like to nominate a woman. The question is, what woman would have the best chance? I think you and I would also agree that if Hillary Clinton is the candidate, she is by far the odds-on favorite at this point, much more than Joe Biden, who's also made noises about running. Beyond that, though, it's not completely clear who the Democrats might turn to if Clinton does not run.
I was going to say, if she doesn't go, then you're looking at even folks like maybe Missouri Governor Jay Nixon taking a look at it.
Well, you've heard that. You know, I do think, again, women, a lot of people are pointing to Elizabeth Warren, the senator from Massachusetts. She has some support, Kristen Gillibrand, some other people who might be candidates. And there are governors up and down the Eastern Seaboard, O'Malley in Maryland, I think his name is. There are others who are interested. So I do think that everyone is waiting on Hillary Clinton's decision. And the fact that Claire McCaskill would in essence endorse her so early does suggest that Hillary Clinton, is giving it a good hard look. I don't think that Claire, and again, you may agree or disagree, but Claire McCaskill would step out this publicly if she thought that, in essence, Hillary Clinton was not going to run and announce that decision in the next 6 months. She may not know for sure, but this is a signal that at least Hillary Clinton is giving it some serious thought, it seems to me.
You do wonder what the timing for Secretary of State Clinton will be, former Secretary of State Clinton will be, when it comes to this issue. Does she announce early that she is or is not a candidate? Will she wait until 2014? Or even after the 2014 midterms? You sort of wonder when we might get some smoke coming out of the chimney when it comes to Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, and I think the first signal will be how active she is and how active Bill Clinton is in campaigning for Democrats in 2014. I don't think she has to necessarily declare, but the pressure is going to increase, Steve. I think at some point other Democrats are going to say, look, you know, you're going to clear the field, Hillary, if you run, and we're happy to do that for you. If you are not going to run, then you ought to let us know fairly quickly so we can go out and raise some money and get our structures in place, because it's going to be a Donnybrook in 2016. And I think she'll have some sense of that. So my guess is, what is this, June of 2013? By June of 2014, a year from now, we'll almost certainly know one way or another if Hillary Clinton is going to be a candidate.
I just wanted to touch on briefly Kris Kobach, the Secretary of State from Kansas, so controversial when it comes to the immigration issue. There was a big protest on Saturday that actually wound up in the doorway of his home up in Piper, which is in Wyandotte County. And, you know, folks spilled all the way down the driveway out into the street, dozens, a couple hundred folks by some estimates. Several buses pulled up and dropped these folks out there protesting Kris Kobach's stand on immigration and other issues. What did you make of this, David?
Well, I saw a little bit of the video. We did a little bit of reporting on it yesterday, and I know you talked to the Secretary of State. I think we wrote, and I think it's true, that these kinds of incidents are highly unusual. There are sort of unwritten rules of politics, and one of them, at least in my time being a political reporter, is you don't take your protest to the private homes of public officials. Now, that isn't always the case. Judges get picketed sometimes. City council
members. Or you can do it in the street, but not actually
going up into the doorway
of the home.
Yeah, but taking a bullhorn up into the doorway of a private home on an issue that is not directly related to his service as Secretary of State, as you know, he does the immigration stuff in another context. I just think it's maybe a bit out of bounds. And I think, frankly, if you talk to Republicans and Democrats, many of whom would have no patience for Kris Kobach on the issues, they would agree with that. That you don't want to get into a world where suddenly elected officials routinely have 200-400 people outside their front door. It just it's not safe. It would cost a lot of money for security, and it's just not part of what should be a good, solid discussion of some of these issues. And frankly, I think some Democrats are mad about this because it drums up sympathy for Kris Kobach.
Yeah, I was going to say, suddenly they've turned Kobach into a sympathetic figure.
Right.
I guess we should point out that he wasn't home. We probably should also point out that he's got young kids. I think he's got three young kids under the age of 10. So this was a matter of some concern for him, and you do begin to wonder about folks overstepping their bounds.
Right. Kris Kobach is a polarizing figure, and I think we all know that, and the things that are written and said about him, pro and con, are pretty aggressive. We get that. But 200 people outside the front door with a bullhorn up the driveway on a weekend, I think most Republicans and Democrats you would talk to who are involved in politics, Steve, would say that they hope that this kind of protest would not expand to other political figures and that it was probably improper in this case as well.
Dave, 30 seconds left. How surprised are you to see President Barack Obama's poll numbers suddenly taking a downturn in the wake of all the controversies, Benghazi, the IRS, the Associated Press reporter phone calls? How surprised are you?
Not surprised at all, and I do think that all of these issues will be a concern for him this year, but the real rubber hits the road next year when Obamacare takes effect. And really, if that works, he will go down as an historic president on policy. If it doesn't work, the last 2 years of his administration will be very, very, very difficult. So I think the real judgment will come, as I suggest, a year from now when we have a better sense of how that's going.
All right, Dave, always good to have you, buddy. Thanks for taking some time.
You bet, man.
That's Dave Helling. He covers politics for the Kansas City Star.